The next topic is sort of a vague and ill-defined one of sort of the state of the left and the state of the NDP across the country, with some sort of regional perspective from each of our panelists. So I'll start again with Northern BC Dipper, because he's first in my Skype window here. one of the big stories that came out this week was the announcement by Michael Byers, professor at the University of British Columbia, that he will be seeking a nomination in Vancouver Centre for the NDP. And there's been a lot of activity on the blogosphere, with a lot of liberals sort of criticizing Byers for remarks he's made about Toronto and wondering if this is going to alienate NDP support in urban Ontario. So, Northern BC Dipper, is Michael Byers the star candidate that the NDP thinks he is, or is he possibly a liability for the NDP?
Well, to be honest, I actually never heard the name before it got onto the papers. But theoretically, with his large education in both Cambridge and Oxford, and with a national profile, I believe he is a bit of an asset. Now, I believe it's interesting that he's running against Hedy Fry, and there's always something interesting about Hedy Fry, and that is that she always seems to win a riding, no matter what's thrown at her, Kim Campbell, Stan Robinson. And the question I'm wondering is Vancouver Centre actually a winnable riding for him? Like, I'm not being cynical about his ability to win, but as much as I would like Hedy Fry gone, especially for her comments about Prince George, I'm not sure if he's going to be the breakthrough we're going to have until Hedy Fry resigns.
That's an interesting point. And, you know, like you, anytime I hear these news stories about, star candidate running for the Liberals, new star candidate running for the NDP, star candidate, nine times out of ten, I've never heard of the person. So it's sort of interesting the way that these declarations of intentions to run get played. Staying in the BC discussion, there was a cabinet shuffle by the provincial government last week, I believe. Could we get your take on what were some of the big stories coming out of that cabinet shuffle, and what will be the effect of that?
Well, the cabinet shuffle is basically seen as a shuffle to prepare for the BC election in 2009. I believe the big story in there is the replacement of the forest minister with Pat Bell. Pat Bell, well, I'll admit he's my MLA. He's from Prince George. He has experience running a logging company, so being connected to forestry in general, I believe that Pat Bell should be a better forest minister than the previous one, who word on the street was he didn't really care about the portfolio, and he always, when a bunch of mills were shut down, he'd always say, well, there's nothing I can do, it's all about the market. So, of course, the risk to Pat Bell is that the forest sector is going to continue to decline and he's going to be blamed for it, which doesn't hurt my feelings too much. It helps our candidate. So I believe that's the big news shift. I believe that's the big news. Some other people were boosted up. We had Kevin Kruger and Kamloops promoted. I believe that helps them in the next election, because in BC, if you win Kamloops, usually you win BC.
Interesting. Okay. Let's move into some of the prairie provinces. Sean, recently there's a provincial by-election in Cumberland, where the Saskatchewan NDP narrowly retained its seat there. Could you give us some perspective on that by-election and sort of Where is the Saskatchewan NDP sitting right now, and where do they go from here?
Well, that by-election sure was a squeaker. I was actually at a fundraising dinner the night after it, And I had a chance to talk with the party president for the province, Jens Petersen, who was newly elected actually this March, and to a couple of the organizers who were just up in Cumberland running that by-election. And it came down to 130 votes. And literally, it was because of the NTP's organizational strength, they won that riding again. I think I was told there was about 13 people on the day of the election literally going to people's houses and convincing them to go out and vote and driving them to those polls, lending them their cars. And each of those people pulled about 10 extra votes that wouldn't have gone out and voted. And then the final total was 130 votes or so in favor of the NDP. So it was a squeaker, 33% turnout. Traditionally, there's about 50% turnout in that riding. And the SAS party, to their credit, did really well. I mean, they kind of ran a cynical campaign where, sorry, the SAS party here is the new government, and they're basically the conservative government, only the former progressive conservatives in Saskatchewan kind of did a lot of bad things and had to sort of fold, and they've come back as a Saskatchewan party. So just a little bit of news there on that. But they ran that by-election fairly cynically. Basically, their candidate went around saying, you're better off having an MLA who's in cabinet to do something for you. If you're in opposition, you're not going to get anything. So it's kind of a blackmail situation, but the voters still decided to go with the NDP, so that was good. The state of the NDP in Saskatchewan right now, it's kind of a lot better than you would think, considering they just lost power in November for the first time in 16 years. We ended up, the NDP ended up holding on to 20 seats, and a fairly good chunk of the original old guard who's been around for a lot of those 16 years stuck around. So there really doesn't seem to be any sense of urgency from sort of what I call the powers to be to do any changes here in Saskatchewan. And my sort of perspective on that is it's to their detriment. We have a premier now who's in his early 40s, is a very photogenic, a very well-spoken premier. Doesn't come off as a big, scary conservative like he would with a Stephen Harper. And here we are with our Lauren Calvert, who was a good premier for his time, but this party needs to go through renewal, and it doesn't seem to be that push to start building for the next election. It's almost like they think they can get away with it again in 2011 and come back and win. So it's kind of quiet here, and nothing's really changed, and the money's flowing in, and the money's getting spent by the conservative government here like you would think it was a socialist government. So that's sort of how it stands right now.
I've heard it joked that in the NDP, if you lose by 100 votes, that's a very close loss, and if you win by 100 votes, that's a landslide. So maybe that's the sense of that's the lack of a sense of urgency. I don't know, but that's interesting. Let's move it to the east and to Jean-François. A lot of things going on in Quebec and in Atlantic Canada right now. I know that you wanted to talk a bit about the 400th anniversary of Quebec City and some of the politicking going on around that. Let's just open the floor. What's going on in Quebec and Eastern Canada right now?
Sure. Well, actually, in terms of elections, there's not so much going on. But in terms of ideas flowing around in Quebec, recently, there was a 400-year anniversary, and the Prime Minister of France was there, along with a bunch of other representatives from all places and all positions. And he was talking about how Quebec and Acadia are all indivisible parts of France, which is interesting. I'm sure a lot of people would disagree with that. And then he was talking about how France, I think, is soon going to be the head of, because in the EU there's a rotating presidency. I think France is going to be the next president of the EU, although I'm not exactly sure. I haven't actually looked it up. But what they will be proposing, though, is for stronger ties, trade ties between Canada and the EU. They're talking about a sort of trade union, and Jean Charest has been pushing for a sort of free trade plus movement of labor. So kind of like kind of being in the European community, but not particularly in any of its political institutions, just having some of the freedom of movement of capital and all that stuff thrown in. So they were talking about that. Quebec's been pushing that for a lot because of course, they have strong ties with France, so that would be easier for them to start trading around, and for Atlantic Canada too, which is on, you know, as you know, on the coast towards Europe, so boats would probably be flowing that way. So I'm not sure what kind of economic impact that would have, but that could be interesting. And yeah, and there's also in terms of the state of the NDP, I know you didn't ask about that, but I figured it was part of the...
Not specifically, but go for it.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually pretty much of a dead land here in Atlantic Canada. I was looking at the things. The New Brunswick NDP's website is down. I don't know for how long. It wasn't much to look at before. And it's pretty much only Nova Scotia where there's NDPs. New Brunswick, there's no NDP. There's no news about NDP either, because, like, in New Brunswick, the news is entirely controlled by Irving, except for a few newspapers. Irving is not so sympathetic to the NDP. So it's pretty much void on that front.
Yeah, there was an interesting discussion about sort of the economic union and issues around trade liberalization, and you mentioned the mobility of labor, and one of the interesting things is that, of course, money doesn't have roots or families or these kinds of reasons to stay where it is, and so I think oftentimes when we talk about these arguments in favor of trade liberalization, in effect, what ends up happening is that our money, to the extent that we have any, gets more freedom than we ourselves do.
That's right, yeah.
That's interesting. Well, before we move on from sort of regional, how's the left, how's the NDP doing, I think we would be derelict in our duty if we didn't mention the Ontario NDP and the recent announcement by Ontario NDP leader Howard Hampton that he will not be seeking another term as leader. So there is effectively a leadership race underway in the Ontario NDP. Now, we don't have anyone calling in from Ontario today, but I have lived there for about the last 22 years of my life, and Sean was also born and raised in Ontario. So we'll make a few brief comments about that, I guess. Right now, the field appears to be wide open. On at newdemocratsonline.ca, there's a discussion forum going where people can punch in rumors that they're hearing about who might be running, who's not, and I think the list is somewhere near 20 names at this point. Sean, did you have any thoughts about the Ontario NDP leadership issue?
I think that whoever becomes a leader there, they need to find a focus. I haven't been in Ontario for 8 years now, but even when I was there 8 years ago, during the heydays of the Harris government, they just never seemed to have that focus, and they seemed to be not sort of connecting with the Ontario public like they were when they were government. And I think they're probably still reeling from that, but hopefully they'll bring in a leader who can sort of take a new direction and give sort of a fresh perspective to the NDP in that province. So I don't want to get into more specifics than that because I haven't been keeping up on the rumors. So.
That's fair. Yeah, I think you're right. There has been a bit of a lack of focus from the Ontario NDP in recent years. The public power campaign obviously was very central to Howard Hampton's leadership. But aside from that, it seemed to be just sort of we oppose the government generally sort of style of campaigning. But I know that Peter Tobbins is considering a run at the leadership, and maybe that would bring in a renewed focus on the environment, and certainly some of the other MPPs and others who are being rumored as leadership candidates would bring in different perspectives. So I guess we'll have to watch what happens during that race and see what happens when the new leader is elected.